want to thank you for being with us, Operation Director of West Alabama Women's Center, which has just reopened, and Diane Dersis, CEO and owner of Jackson Women's Health Organization, Mississippi's only abortion clinic. Was sat there of the Supreme Court case that overturned Roe v. Wade. It has closed. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. This program has been brought to you today by the Tom Pastilio and Vicki Conlon team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, hosts of the Jazz Loft Summer Music Series in Stony Brook Village. The Tom Pastilio and Vicki Conlon team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate may be reached at tomandmickey.com. We thank them for their support of WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. The time is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, which means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Good evening, everybody. It's another Tuesday evening, as mentioned. And this is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Buenos dias.
Oh, we're doing that, huh? Okay, yeah, it's a beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just proud of myself because you just brought me a cup of coffee and I commented on how smooth it tasted and you told me that you put distilled water in it this time and it's different as a result.
Yeah, the supply chain seems to have been able to condense water again.
Mm-hmm. I noticed the difference.
It wasn't available for a long
time. I don't think of myself as a connoisseur, but occasionally, you know, I get it right.
Yeah, so we can get into the refining of our water filtration systems and mm-hmm. other infrastructure, but that's not what we're here for.
No, we haven't figured out why we're here yet.
Coffee making is fascinating, though, and support your local brewers and...
Yeah, your local brewers, not the corporate ones.
Or maybe do it yourself, as much as you can,
yeah.
As much as you're into.
But if you're going to go to a coffee shop, go to one that isn't a chain, that's run by local people, and, it's basically dependent on you.
Don't support bad coffee.
And don't support bad coffee. Yeah, we won't tell you which is bad coffee because that's presumptuous.
And subjective.
But you know. You know what's good and what's bad. We don't have to tell you. All right. And it also makes it a lot easier on us if we don't have to tell you because then we have to figure it out.
Well, and so many stories to get through here.
Yeah. But it's a good cup of coffee, Kyle.
You're welcome.
In fact, I'm going to give the mic to you while I take another full sip.
Yes. And hopefully it's not too hot.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't, does it? So as that's sinking in... All right.
Now, my tongue will heal, but this taste, that's a limited thing. I got to get to it while it's piping hot.
Yes.
Ooh, that burns. That does burn going down, though. I feel it all the way.
I hope our sensitive listeners appreciate the resolution of that sip of coffee. Yeah, that's how loud and clear things are here.
Why am I drinking coffee at 6 in the evening?
Because we're doing radio, man.
I guess, yeah. It's the only way I can be somewhat cogent.
Happy anniversary to WSB, if it hasn't been said enough. Well, and happy 4th of July. Hope everybody has...
You're way behind. This is now the 12th of July. Our anniversary was June 27th. The country's anniversary was July 4th. Canada Day was July 1st. I don't know what we could be marking right now. Well, you know what? We could be marking the Webb Telescope and all the amazing pictures that came out today.
It was momentous.
Today. I mean, I guess when people look back on this, like maybe not 100 years from now, but certainly 1,000 years from now, when people are riveted to this particular broadcast and saying, wow, how could these idiots have missed this amazing story, which basically is a chapter in the history of humanity? It is the day when we saw pictures of the universe like we have never seen them before. We're basically, you know, you're seeing almost the beginning of the universe, 13 billion years ago. That's how long it took the light to get to us. And the universe, I think, is only like 13 billion and like 35 days old. So it's pretty close to the beginning. And the pictures that came out today, you know, I got to see a few of them. I want to see a lot more, but I had to do this damn radio show. I didn't have time. They are just so incredibly vivid, and I guess speech-defying is an easy way for me to get out of describing it anymore, because it's something that makes you realize how tiny and small and insignificant your galaxy is. You thought I was going to say us? No, we don't even measure. No, our entire galaxy is so puny and insignificant, doesn't even measure up to a pinprick. The way they described it, they had a little preview last night with Biden and Harris. If you hold your arm out, all right, you, I don't know why I'm doing this on the radio, but if you hold your arm out straight, and at the very end of your arm you're holding a grain of sand, if you look at that grain of sand, that is the amount of sky that was illustrated in the picture that was released yesterday. So imagine that little grain of sand held at an arm's length. And you have not only the entire sky that you see right now, but the whole sky that you don't see on the other side of the Earth. So that's a lot. That oh my God, I can't, what's the point of anything, Kyle? I mean, seriously, we are, I mean, grains of sand have more significance than us, I think. Oh boy, I need another cup of coffee to maybe give me some reason to go on.
Well, those images are just the beginning, so...
That's more?
It may be that...
More?
Oh, well, no. In the life cycle of this amazing piece of equipment, and it's only the first images, this work and so forth, it may be why it's underappreciated. So it's going to take a while for this work to show the fruits of its labor. Think about how long Hubble was in operation before... Just uttering Hubble meant something,
right.
In the same way as what James Webb might, or this Webb telescope might, mean to us after years and years of research, after it's been looking at more and more of this for years. So this is very early days for it, and it's certainly exciting, but so much more yet to be to be looked at, to be visited, to be interpreted from all of the capabilities that we now have.
I think, you know, there's enough in here where we can each basically point to something and say, that's mine. I want that. I'm going to name that after me. I found something myself, like a little galaxy. A little galaxy. Not a big, you know, show-offy galaxy. Just a small, humble galaxy.
Like a fixer-upper?
Maybe. I'm not sure how much you can do on it, but I just saw it in one of the pictures, and I said, I like that one. And I figure, you know, okay, I found that. I pointed to that. There's a lot more. You think of a little grain of sand and the whole sky. Everybody can have their own, but I want that one, all right? And I called it first, so it's mine. I'm not going to tell you which one it is, because then someone's going to try and, like, see me in court or something like that. But I just think, you know, we have all these amazing objects now to look at, and I don't know how we're going to get our heads around it. I think maybe by claiming them, that's the only way we can get our heads around it. One thing that I thought is particularly interesting that this telescope can do is basically analyze atmospheres of planets, exoplanets that are circling around distant stars, or even, you know, fairly nearby stars. And in so doing, they can say, this one is likely to harbor life, or this one could sustain us as living creatures. And I thought, okay, well, if that's the case, and we're able to point to that particular part of the sky and say, that is a good candidate for an Earth-like planet, do we have the ability now to point our radio telescopes in that direction, you know, the ones that are listening for signs of life, the SETI project of years past? Now that we know where it's likely that there could be life, can we listen? Can we point to something? I mean, think of how tiny, you know, that little part of the sky is, and how we could have been getting it wrong for many, many years. But if we have something to point at, I'm just saying, it could really result in something amazing.
Yeah, and a great, like, market for reruns and stuff. And, you know, we can broadcast that way, too, and share some of our wonderful culture.
You're talking about the fact that radio waves go out into space and,
yeah.
And the movie Contact and all that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just throwing some ideas around since you...
You know, for those who don't know, FM radio waves, which is what analog TV broadcast on as well, could go out into space forever. They just make a beeline. Those of you on WUSB AM, that other station on campus that we don't talk about, they don't get that because AM radio waves don't go straight. They bounce off the ionosphere and come back down. Yeah, so... our signal is going out there, and speed of light, of course, so it's limited by that. We were talking about the speed of light earlier in the week concerning...
quantum mechanics?
Yeah, quantum communications, because there was a story that came out about quantum communications and how that could be an effective way of communicating.
Yeah.
And the implication was that somehow it would be leapfrogging over the speed of light. And a lot of people believe that. I think you believed it, too, and I believed it.
I think I was definitely confused about it.
But then I looked it up and found quite a few scientific journals that said, no, that's not what's happening. That's not what people think is possible. But I do think at some point we have to get there, because otherwise all of this that we're looking at in the sky, all of the stars and the galaxies and whatever else, all of that is just there to mock us. You know, it's all there to say, you can never get to us. And I think nature's cruel, but wow, that would really be a level of cruelty I didn't know was capable of being achieved on interstellar level. So I think we have to figure it out at some point. You know, just like we once thought the Earth was flat, and for a few people, you still think the Earth is flat. But, you know, back when that was the common theory, imagine, you know, exploring, just walking into the forest or sailing on a boat. You just think you're going on forever and ever. You don't think you're going to eventually come back around. Something similar is likely true of the universe, where we assume something, we all believe it, but it's not true, and we just haven't figured it out yet. Yeah, I can't say more than that. I don't know more than that, but that's my theory.
Great theory.
And you can't have it. It's mine.
We're finding out more things, and surely everyone is bracing for the myriad theories and things that will be learned. And I hope that there's more discussion and education about how to interpret some of these findings and what are the implications. And that just that thought of using a telescope like this, a space telescope that can analyze in that way, it sounds like straight out of science fiction, like something you would hear on a show that they're, you know, approaching a distant planet and, mm-hmm. and running their analysis. That's an incredible thing, just to say it in and of itself. So there's so much to this, and we could probably go on and on asking questions.
Yeah, and to infinity, just like these pictures we're seeing.
They're so clear, though. The imagery is incredible mm-hmm. versus what I grew up with. Sure.
Now, I wonder, you know, and I'm very ignorant about all this, just how much in the way of artificial life can something like this detect? If, say, there was something, say, orbiting a moon of Saturn, you know, or a moon of Jupiter, if there was some sign of intelligent life there, I don't believe there is, but if there were, would something like this, would the Webb Space Telescope be able to detect any kind of a signature? And how far out does that go? You know, the edge of our solar system into another solar system. There's all kinds of things that I really want to find out about this. And I guess the one thing that I think we should be doing right now is working on another one. You know, now that we've built one and sent it up, I imagine it's not going to take us decades to build another one. And, you know, the sky is really huge. And while this thing is amazing, it's not going to cover it all. So let's get another 5 or 10 up there, you know, put them all over the place, and really start spying on our neighbors and seeing what's out there, because that's how you're going to find out.
Well, you could do wider scans and assemble large planetarium models that you could simulate and virtualize and basically help with sort of remote and virtual astronomy and astrophysics, like people able to do the exploring independently with compilations of all the kinds of imagery and information that, and I'm sure that there's plenty of other projects out there like that already, but the integration and coordinating it all and making things more interoperable and of course approachable and that kind of thing is going to evolve, I think, very quickly, especially around these kind of leaps in the abilities. But I agree, yeah, like, you definitely want to have a spare, at least.
Mm-hmm. We'll get a New York Times story about this right now. I'm trying to figure out the exact URL to send people to. If you go to the New York Times story about the Webb telescope, you'll see a picture. You know, I want the downloaded images, the huge ones. And imagine if you go to NASA.gov, you'll eventually find it. But they're not very good at, like, directing you to the right images.
Yeah, I was looking around. What I saw is a NASA page that had 6 different tabs. There was the main image, and then you can click on different tabs. There are different areas of interest that were sort of examples of the first scientific imagery they were going to describe and go through for public release. And then below that, I think there's a link that says full resolution. And as you click on each tab, it'll, I think, provide you a link for the full resolution options. But I didn't click it, and I didn't actually go for downloading it. So mm-hmm. I'm just saying what I expected to happen had I actually gone for it.
Are you suspicious of NASA images? You think they're trying to get a virus into your computer?
I was not on a desktop machine.
Uh-huh.
I was browsing from let's say, a computer that I didn't want to download the images to yet.
Okay, if you, I'm just looking at an image now. If you see something in an image that you think people should be, or that authorities should be alerted to, who do you contact? Like, you know, I'm not saying specifically that this is something to be worried about, but it could be. It could be,
like product placement?
No.
Are they threatening?
Well, you don't know that. You don't know that for sure. They're still pretty far away, but, you know, if they look like they could be menacing, especially if they turn port side a little bit more.
Burying their teeth.
Yeah. Or it could just be a smudge. I don't know. But, you know, if it's something that you feel you should share, because, you know, I know scientists can't look at every single millimeter of these images, so you might see something that's, you know, definitely worrying.
Oh, true. They're probably counting on the public very much and other academic peers to go through it and provide details. So I'm certain there's some kind of mechanism for that if people find areas of interest. But I think the tools available too at NASA and to maybe non-governmental or members of the public to use tools and software and various things to analyze these images with computer aid and so forth.
George Lucas, no, just wow. Okay, let's move away from this for now. We'll come back to it.
Yeah, I've got my head in the stars.
Yeah.
Stop.
All right. So what else is going on in the world? Well, of course, we saw the press conference last night with Biden and Harris being briefed by NASA. You know, I'm seeing a disturbing trend. I really am. Every time Biden does something, or every time Harris does something, they're just relentlessly mocked all the time. I get it. You know, leaders should be mocked. That's not something that we should ever shy away from. But the reasons they're being mocked just seem so
petty.
Petty and just, I don't know. Like, okay, for instance, there was an article in the Times a couple of days ago. Most Democrats don't want Biden in 2024, new poll shows. And, you know, I've seen a bunch of people. Okay, this is the ultimate. I've seen a bunch of Bernie Sanders supporters saying, we can't have Joe Biden in, you know, running again. He's too old. Okay, Bernie Sanders, people, come on. That's not what you want to say. That's really not what you want to say.
Is that for real, though?
Yeah.
I
don't think it's an official position, but I've seen people who ally themselves with the Sanders camp. You know, and I consider myself one of them. I would prefer Sanders to be in power, but, you know, I know that that wasn't possible. I know that it wouldn't have worked. I think this is the problem. I think progressives, and I consider myself a progressive, I really do. I would love nothing more than to have progressives in power doing progressive things. But I think what progressives don't understand is that voting progressive is not how you make the country progressive. You know, it is if you win, yes, but you're not going to win. And there are so many examples of this. Okay, look, New York City, pretty damn liberal city, right? We just had a primary election or an election to basically for the Democratic candidacy. And it was a foregone conclusion that whoever won that was going to win the general in November. So you had progressive candidates. You had several of them. And you had the kind of voting where, you know, it was basically, what do they call that, where you vote for your first choice and your second
choice? Ranked
choice. Ranked choice, yeah. Considered a very democratic way of voting. Okay, so it couldn't have been more fair. It couldn't have been more open and open to alternatives. And I was really hoping that a progressive candidate would go through. Who did New York City Democrats pick? An ex-cop. They picked an ex-cop, a moderate ex-cop. All right, you know, that is reality. I certainly would have preferred somebody more progressive, but that's not what we got. That's not the reality. And right now, at this stage in this country's history, the progressive candidate is not going to win. Now, how does the country move to be more progressive? By electing people that are not on the super right-hand side, and people who are as liberal as we can get realistically. And then we have more progressive people in positions of power, and we slowly start to move. I want to go faster, but it's not happening. And if we continue to do things like tear down Joe Biden and mock him and make fun of the way he talks and all these other stupid things that you expect from the other side, you don't expect from the side that wants to keep the other side out, we're simply going to hand it over to them yet again. You know, it's ridiculously stupid. It's bad politics. You know, I want progressive a movement in this country more than anybody, but you don't get it by infighting. You don't get it by tearing each other down.
I really hear this assumption of not getting exactly what you want as equating to having lost.
Yeah.
And I think that is a real pitfall, like, across the board. Incremental nature is an attribute of politics you have to get comfortable with. And, of course, in American politics, things are slow in by design.
You know, Joe Biden was giving a speech the other day where he was touting the accomplishments of the gun regulations that had been passed. You know, pathetic in my eyes, but it was something. And he was shouted down by one of the parents of one of the Parkland victims. And the way it was reported on Fox News was that Biden's speech was interrupted by somebody. You know, Biden's gun regulation speech was interrupted by somebody. I think that's as far as they went. Now, the way that headline reads makes it seem like everybody is opposed to gun regulation, and that's not true at all. This guy was shouting him down because it didn't do enough. And I'm in total agreement with that. It didn't do enough. But when you have one side saying it didn't go far enough, you have the other side saying, how dare you even try to regulate guns, what they do in the right wing and on Fox News is basically combine that into opposition against Joe Biden. So it's the people who think he hasn't gone far enough and the people who think he's gone too far. They're not the same people, but the way it's being portrayed in the media makes it seem like he has all this opposition against him that is for the other side. Could not be any more false than that. You know, when they ask people questions like, are you happy with the direction the country is going? And most people say no. Somehow the media equates that with people are not satisfied with Biden. How about the Supreme Court? Maybe that's why people think the country's not going in a good direction. How about because of the insurrection? Maybe that's why. How about because of all the hatred and racism that's out there? And yet, you always circle back and pin it on this one guy who, you know, I know it's not enough. I get that. But we always knew it wasn't going to be enough. We always knew this is what we voted for. This is what we're going to get. It's all we can get at this point. Sure, I would have loved to have Sanders. I would have loved to have Warren. I would have loved to have any number of progressive candidates in that position. But it was obvious the rest of the country wasn't going to go along with that. So it's either Trump or Biden. Which do you do? Do you stay home and not do anything? That's the worst choice of all. So, you know, you can't be surprised when you see a guy who's acting like somebody who's 80, but making the right decisions overall. Are they strong enough? No, but that's not entirely his fault. For instance, you know, codifying a woman's right to an abortion requires Congress. So the people you should be really mad at are those Congress people, you know? Those senators, those people who do nothing, those people who act against your wishes, those people who put these horrible individuals in a position of ultimate power in the Supreme Court. That's who you should be yelling at. You know, not this poor guy who's just doing what he said he was going to do. So, yeah, when I see an article like this come out, Democrats don't want Biden 2024, what is your alternative? What's your other plan? Because I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing you saying this is better. I'm just seeing a lot of finger-pointing and dissatisfaction. And that's how you lose. That's how you've always lost. When are you going to learn? When are you going to learn how to fight these people?
It's creating also this panic, which may not exactly be, that takes away attention from successes and what coordination there is in the current administration.
It's a foregone conclusion that Democrats are going to lose big in November. Why? Because they've always lost in when the president is a Democrat. Okay, but you know what the Republicans have done in the last few years is unforgivable. Unforgivable. They tried to steal an election. They're doing all kinds of anti-women, anti-gay, anti-trans, racist things, and we're going to let them get away with them? We're going to give them more power? What does that say about us, that we assume that's what's going to happen? And when you say things over and over again, that's what's going to happen.
There needs to be just more confidence. I would hope that people can muster some confidence and that the anxiety around what might be possible in future elections, to say nothing of the immediate ones, is creating this panic to find an alternative. I guess that's the thing you're saying. Is that the plan?
Like, the problem is,
okay, so then the Democrats spend 6 months or 14 months panicking over finding a new candidate.
Why?
And a new
now? Why in 2022? Why didn't you do that in 2020?
It's self-defeating.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you're going to lose, you will lose. And the problem, it's not Biden. It's us. It's all of us who can't get behind ourselves and fight. Yeah, you know, maybe you don't win everything at once. But if you don't take steps backwards, that's a victory. And then you move on to the next victory. That is the way you make progress. And you know, I just think there's this childishness that you want it all at once or nothing. And you get nothing. And you get worse than nothing. You get backwards momentum. Look where we are now. Roe versus Wade is gone. You know, gay marriage might be next. And who knows what comes after that. You know? And what, we're still going to be upset that Biden is 80? Hey, I got news for you. Trump is what, 77? We're talking 3 years difference. That's different between a senior and a freshman, for God's sake. They're the same. In fact, you know, Biden is a lot more cogent than Trump ever was.
And rides his bike. Trump refuses to ride his bike.
Yeah, Trump holds that up.
I don't even think he has a bicycle.
He holds that up as some kind of triumph that, yeah, I'm not going to ride a bike.
I bet Biden could ride a tall bike. I'm not suggesting that.
We'll do his out of office before we challenge him with
all
that. Because he'll take you up on the challenge.
He
I
would.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, to counter this, nearly half of Republicans don't want Trump as president in 2024, so that's good. It's a little disturbing that it's more than half Democrats and less than half of Republicans. But, again, Republicans, so, yeah, what do you expect? But, yeah, nearly half of all Republican primary voters want a candidate other than President Trump as president in 2024.
It's all this early tea leaves. They're looking for ways to poll early, and like you said, find the evidence for their conclusions.
Here's the thing, though. If let's say you somehow get Trump not to run, and that's going to be interesting. I'd like to see how you get there. But okay, so now you have somebody like DeSantis running, and you know he is younger, and he is more dynamic, and he's less cloddish than Trump, but he is so much more dangerous because he knows what he's doing. He knows how to get these horrible bits of legislation passed. Look at what's happening in Florida. Look at what's happening where math textbooks were deemed too controversial because of some critical race theory that they never explained to anybody. The horrible things they're doing, and that could come to the entire nation.
It's DeSantis trying to prove to Trump, or trying, I think, to seem as though he needs DeSantis more than DeSantis needs Trump, and would set them up to basically keep Trump off the scene because he's a liability or whatever, and just basically keep him being like a hype man for DeSantis, if that was the ticket or the direction
I'll
of the party,
and
to like kind of just be his like muscle in the back.
My greatest nightmare is exactly that, a Trump DeSantis ticket. You know,
no, I'm not saying Trump wouldn't even run. He'd just be on the sidelines, approving of DeSantis or getting, you know, DeSantis convincing Trump, hey, you need me more than I need you.
Okay, nobody
to get his.
Nobody has ever convinced Trump of that he needs them more than they need him.
Yeah, but I think that's the cunning that DeSantis thinks himself capable of.
Yeah, but that would do him in. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's going to work. But
something like that, even if Trump wasn't on the ticket, I'm saying that he would still be there to try to...
If you put, I can't believe I'm giving Republican advice here, but if you put Trump, you know, forefront as a figurehead and DeSantis as the evil guy in the back who, you know, actually knows what he's doing without telling Trump that... then you have something that is analogous to the real rise of fascism.
That's like a Bush-Cheney kind of thing, right?
Except,
a little bit.
Yeah, that never really, apart from the Gulf War and all that horror, it didn't pan out as badly as I thought it was going to be, and, you know, I don't want to minimize that in any way.
But Cheney
only
was,
because, you know, I'm seeing what's happening now.
Cheney was characterized as, like, some mastermind, and then Bush at the time was, you know, sort of a buffoon or
and
not,
he might
not
have been.
Taken
he might very well have been.
Yeah.
But still, compared to what we're seeing now.
But you think that's stronger.
Bad as that was, you know, starting a war that killed so many people that was based on a complete lie. Don't get me started about that. But to say something is worse than that, you know, take that seriously. That is scary.
That's where we are. Welcome to the present.
Yeah. The hearing today, interesting stuff.
I missed a bunch of it. I don't know. Can you wrap? How would you sum it up in a word?
Well, I mean, you know, you got to see how bloggers and vloggers were basically egging everybody on and just riling up the crowd and getting people to show up and implying that there was going to be violence and... It was really extremely ugly. Nothing that, you know, surprised me so much, but so important that everybody see this. So important that every daytime TV program gets preempted so that people see the ugliness that was our nation on that day. And hopefully something actually happens. Something actually gets done to prevent this kind of thing from ever occurring again. I don't know. It's always eye-opening and riveting to see these things. And you can always see it again. It's online. Go to C-SPAN. I'm sure you can find it there.
It really is something that makes you appreciate the system that we have, that we've been working with, modifying, molding, correcting, dealing with, and a part of. And it takes persistence and participation and I don't know, a lot of energy, and that's, you can't take your eye off it. It is something that we all must take an interest in, and wow, the more we learn about this plan, and that this is the kind of politician that they're trying, the where they're setting the bar for politicians, and where they'd like to have us wrangle as a public. The esteem, right, and the academic nature of politicians doesn't exist, if you haven't noticed, if you're new to our system. They're kind of like, you know, car salesmen a little bit. They're intelligent sometimes. And we vote them in, and they kind of do certain things and play with fundraising dollars and then big budgets and move things around and talk at people, and it's an important job, and it's been reduced to some pretty lousy stuff, and the average Americans, to make sense of it, it's kind of insulting.
Yeah,
but don't lose faith, you know, participate. If you feel like you want to deride people that were elected in, that you may be elected in, that's fine, but get busy, you know, do that, but also get connected with people who are making a difference, who maybe are combining their powers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a place where you could put that energy, where you might feel a little bit more satisfied with the result instead of being constantly upset.
Yeah, and now is the time to get organized. Get other people to register to vote, make sure they show up in November, because doing that is the only way to ensure that we don't take a hard right turn and go down a road that it's possible might not even be recoverable, might not be possible to get back from that. Reason being, you know, every time more power is given to these people, they do something horrible to hold on to that power, such as making it almost impossible for certain people to vote. taking away voting rights altogether from other people, and giving all kinds of power to legislatures and basically making it so that an election they don't approve of just gets overturned. They are setting that up right in front of us. They are setting that up. If you vote for them, you're voting for that, and
well,
you may not get the chance to vote again.
I hope that it comes down to people's actual interests locally and of course nationally, and that they're careful about who they get behind,
mm-hmm.
and what kinds of actions and political behavior they're putting their vote and their donation dollars if they're doing that behind,
mm-hmm.
and you know, don't align yourself necessarily. I like to think hopefully that this extreme end and platform is getting less, you know, lower. I don't want to know that they're increasing their numbers. I think that should be important.
That's
convincing
our only hope.
I hope people are, you know, becoming more, like I said, independent, neutral, thinking less about just blind affiliation,
mm-hmm.
and raw, incendiary rage for the other, for people that you have been told are the problem. Maybe the problem's all around you.
It's just insane. You know, going back to what I was saying about Biden earlier, we as a nation are quick to point the finger at him as the cause of a problem. For instance, rising gas prices. When, you know, this is the result of world economic issues. Not only you know, inflation and recession and things like that, but the war, you know, in Ukraine with Russia, you know, that is causing prices to skyrocket. It's got nothing to do with Biden except for the fact that he opposes what's going on in Ukraine, like every other civilized nation does. All right, there's that. There's coming out of COVID. That certainly had an effect on economies all over the world. So, yeah, be upset, be angry, but, you know, realize where to cast the blame. It's not because of one person's actions or the fact that they're in power. You know, if you elect a Republican to take over, it's not going to affect gas prices, not at all. If they start mining and digging for oil everywhere, you know, that's not going to affect gas prices, not for decades. So that's not the answer.
Yeah, they're supplying as much as they can right now.
It's just, it's insane. And gas prices are going down now. No one's giving Biden credit for that. No, because that's not him, of course. It's just, if you look at the propaganda you're being fed, it doesn't take much to realize when you're being lied to. And when somebody is always at fault, no matter what they do, you know, they do something that benefits you, well, that doesn't count because the only reason you were able to do that was because somebody else set it up. If you're being told things like that over and over again where this guy never does anything good, then that's propaganda. And you can say, yeah, you know, but you guys were the same way with Trump. It's a fair point, but Trump did so many things that were so outrageous and egregiously terrible and racist, and we could just go on and on and on. I think you'd have a better time at that argument if it was somebody like Bush or somebody like Reagan. But Trump is, no matter what side of the political spectrum he was on, Trump is an anomaly. And I think we all need to realize the threat, regardless of our political parties.
Well, also, symptom of a pretty sick, sick system.
It really is. Anyway, enough about that. You ever read the Houston Chronicle?
I think.
I don't, and here's why. Here's an opening story about that high-speed Texas rail project.
Oh, yeah. They were, like, getting eminent domain and getting through, like, a route planned out.
Texas Central, I believe, is what it's called.
Houston and Austin?
Houston and Dallas.
Dallas.
The departure of Texas Central Railway's CEO has critics of the proposed bullet train between Houston and Dallas optimistic the controversial project has reached its last stop, far short of ever starting construction. Now, once you dissect that sentence, you realize what they're trying to say here is that that project is dead. Texas High Speed Rail is collapsing before our eyes, said Republican Representative Kevin Brady. Why are Republicans so happy when there's no high-speed rail? It's amazing. Today, with no leadership, no funding, no permits, and no Washington bailout from taxpayers, this project is dead.
That's straight up Texas. That's how they do it.
Why? You're just shooting yourself in the foot.
Doesn't support all the refineries.
I guess. Their CEO stepped down in December. He stepped in December 2016 and stepped down more recently than that. While I could not align our current stakeholders on a common vision for a path forward, I wish the project the greatest success and remain convinced of the importance of this venture for the safety and prosperity of all Texans. That's Carlos Aguilar, who said that when he left. So that doesn't sound like he's condemning it. Sounds like he still supports it. Texas Central did not respond to a request for comment. Again, comment on what? On this idiot saying the project is dead? Aguilar's departure follows a bad few months for the company, which dramatically slashed its staff early in the COVID pandemic. Who didn't? While saying it still planned to break ground soon on the 240-mile line between the two metro areas.
Oh, they broke.
The Federal Railroad Administration in September 2020 approved plans for the line, mostly along a utility corridor through 11 Texas counties with a stop near College Station. All sounds good. Well, a major step forward, the announcement was among the last significant moves for the proposed train line. That was to use Japanese Shinkansen rail cars assembled in the United States to whisk travelers between Houston and Dallas in 90 minutes. Unreal. For nearly 2 years, Texas Central announced various reiterations of previous agreements, shed more staff, and fought critics who sought to strip it of its condemnation rights. The issue of whether the company can acquire property via eminent domain remains unresolved, with a ruling pending from the Texas Supreme Court. Texas Central, meanwhile, has not paid its property taxes for land it already purchased, something critics in rural areas opposed to the train have said for months. Well, you know, basically this story does nothing but quote people who are opposed to the project and make it seem like the project is dead. Yeah, you know, before you get the permits to actually get the land that you need, you can't really operate the company. How does that work exactly? You don't have the land yet. You're waiting for regulations. You're waiting for rulings. And once you get that, that's when you break ground. You can't really point to them and say, aha, you're going out of business because you're not breaking ground, but you don't yet have the land because we're waiting for legislators to get off their asses and help out and make this thing happen. That's the story. But what they ran here in the Houston Chronicle is basically an obituary for this thing.
It's like they interviewed all the employees who were resigned to the fact that their job was just a job. It's like, have you ever worked someplace where no one wants to be there, but they all just work there? I mean, that's every job, but, like, really hated it.
You're saying that's the case here?
It sounds like they're just complaining.
They have no money,
they have no support, they have nothing, no coordination, they're slashing their staff.
Who are you quoting by saying that? You're saying they have no support, no...
Well, that's what you're
that's what
pointing
they're trying. That's what they're
like
they're
five people. I'm saying they interviewed like five people
but not,
that were upset because their
the
lame job
who, not
stopped.
The people who work for the train company. They're not saying that. They're not quoting them. They're not quoting employees. They're not quoting people who have this vision. They're only quoting the naysayers.
And you see, it fooled me.
Mm-hmm.
That's framing.
The title is Critics Say the Idea of a Houston-Dallas Bullet Train Could Be Over.
Yeah, critics.
Yeah, of course, critics
will
say
that all caps?
From the beginning.
Wow.
It's really...
fooled me.
Yeah. I want to see that train move forward. I really do. You know, I want to see it move forward fast. And I support it. And it would actually be one of the few things that gets me to go to Texas.
Yeah,
Think about that. Think about the weight of that statement.
I'm being critical, but, you know... I want to see it happen, too. Maybe they could name it after an oil company or something. I don't mean
no.
to be...
No. Okay, I have some good news. Or do you not want good news?
No, that's all I want.
You
just
want good news?
Nothing but good news. That's right. Just please, just tell me all the good things. Bad ever.
It comes from that local paper that I don't understand called The Patch, which I don't know if it's a paper or a computer or what.
The Patch.
Yeah, it's there's one everywhere, and I don't know how the stories get written. But sometimes they're accurate, and usually they always get racist comments for some reason from real people. But in this particular case, the headline reads, Shinnecock break ground on cannabis dispensary, a momentous occasion. Under bright blue skies, members of the Shinnecock Indian Nation welcome the dawning of a new vision, Munfei. I guess that's a way of saying Monday in Patchland, Munfei, as ground was broken on the new Little Beach Harvest Cannabis Dispensary, which all agreed would not be, it's all agreed, so there's no naysayers here, would not be just an economic generator, but will serve as a boon for the entire community and beyond.
Oh, I'm saving up my pennies and dollars right now.
You saw the pictures of the telescope. That kind of beyond. Yeah. Everywhere. The Shinnecock Nation said, actually, and Tilt Holdings, they hosted the official groundbreaking ceremony for the facility, which is located at 56 Montauk Highway. So line up now, I guess. The first of its kind, fully indigenous-owned cannabis operation. Little Beach Harvest is positioned right along the main Southampton roadway, creating a unique engagement point between the First People and the Hamptons community. Why did the Hamptons get it first? That's not fair. Those people don't deserve it. Hamptons. Here, Stony Brook area, you know? We've been researching cannabis for many decades. Never mind. The dispensary and cultivation facility are slated to kick off this year. The Shinnecock Cannabis Regulatory Division will regulate all operations according to the Shinnecock Nation's tribal cannabis laws. Yeah.
You better believe it, too.
This means a lot to our community, what we're going to do today, said Shanai Bullock, a Shinnecock tribal member, managing director of Little Beach Harvest. It's a big deal for our tribe. What we're doing with this sacred plant is going, a sacred plant, it's just so nice to hear that said, is going to heal not only the Shinnecock community, but so many in the world. And that's not just through commerce, but through education, and the energy put into giving this plant a voice again. Shinnecock people have been on the land for years, she said. There's so much rich history on the thing we have done that have changed so many things in the world, from whaling industry to how to plant. What we're getting ready to break ground on is something new to do for not only our community, but the entire East End and the entire world. I'm not sure about the whaling part, but I'll skip over that for now. Didn't know they weren't involved in that at all. Tribal Chairman Brian Polite, we've quoted him before, also spoke, thanking the Creator. We've had so much loss in the last couple of years. That is truly a blessing that we could be here today, marking this really momentous occasion in Shinnecock Nation's history. This journey began almost 7 years ago with Connor Green Consulting, trying to make inroads in the medical cannabis industry. He said, it's been a struggle. 2 years ago in 2019, we were super close to moving forward. But then the pandemic hit, and it basically changed everything. As Shinnecocks, it brought us closer together, but it also gave us a lot of challenges. Throughout our history, we've shown resiliency, and that's what this marks today, the resiliency of the Shinnecock Indian Nation in the face of adversity, to get things done and to move our nation forward, meaning the Shinnecock Nation.
Yeah, that is beautiful to hear, and it's about, I think, healing. There's a lot of good that the sacred plant, as they say, can do in the world, and I think for their economy and they're renowned in the neighborhood, and of course the things they're going to learn and be able to share with other nations across this country and in the state of New York is going to be crucial lessons really important going forward. So I'm happy for it. I'm happy to hear about that, and I'm sure there's going to be other examples, and we'll learn more about their progress in the future.
And just to give a little bit of background here, the Shinnecock Indian Nation is a federally recognized tribe of historically Algonquian-speaking Native Americans based at the eastern end of Long Island. They are headquartered in Suffolk County on the southeastern shore. Since the mid-19th century, the tribe's land base is the Shinnecock Reservation within the geographic boundaries of the town of Southampton. The name Shinnecock roughly translates into English as people of the stony shore. So that's pretty fascinating right there. The only other reservation on Long Island is the Pusputuk Reservation. That's an Indian reservation of the Uncachagi Band in the community of Mastic in Suffolk County. Population 436, as of the 2020 census. But there was a story that came out just today, actually, about another group known as the Montauquettes. And again, forgive me if I'm mispronouncing any of these. These are words I've never said before. Leaders of the Montauquette Indian Nation met last week with officials from Governor Kathy Hochul's administration to urge her to back legislation they say will right a century-old wrong by restoring the tribe's state recognition. Legislation to secure the Long Island tribe's recognition, authored by State Assemblyman Fred Teal of Sag Harbor, passed the state legislature in the most recent session, as it has in past years, when former Governor Andrew Cuomo vetoed it repeatedly. Yeah, imagine that.
Nice guy.
This time, Montauquette leaders said supporters say they are hopeful. Let's try that again. This time, Montauquette leaders and supporters say they are hopeful the new administration will take note of years of work they've done to document the tribe's history, their recognition by other tribal and local governments, and the injustice of a 1910 court ruling they say wrongfully declared the tribe extinct. The tribe has more than 400 verified members on Long Island, more than 1,200 across the country, according to leaders. Avi Small, a spokesman for the governor's office, told Newsday that Hochul was reviewing the legislation. Montauquette Chief Robert Ferroa, who for 35 years has pursued efforts to reinstate the tribe's federal and state recognition, expressed hope Hochul would see the tribe's quest differently. Actually, that's probably pronounced Pharaoh, because that's how it's spelled. Pharaoh noted voluminous, so many difficult words in this article, voluminous historical and tribal membership information supplied to the state over the years in response to past requests. It's about correcting an injustice, said Pharaoh, a direct descendant of a family that led the tribe for centuries and who fled the century-old lawsuit to retake land improperly sold for Long Island Railroad expansion on the East End. Yeah. Farrow of Sag Harbor said the effort isn't about building a casino or making land claims. It's about getting some justice for my ancestors. Well, I hope they succeed. I really do. And that the Montauquettes get their day in court or get some justice. And that I learn how to pronounce their name properly. And I guess that's it for us tonight with that optimistic note.
More than optimistic, there's so much to be done, and I hope everyone stays cool. Keep listening to this fabulous radio station, WUSB Stony Brook, and we'll come back. We'll bring some more stories. We'll chat, talk about this and that.
Is that Finn I see?
Oh, he's coming.
Yeah.
I think that's him. I see a silhouette.
How can we see him? We're nowhere near him. But we know he's there. Coming up from 7 to 9.
It's telekinesis.
OTW at 2600.com. Good night.
「涙と風」「冷えた水もにほつれ髪うつし」「涙と」 せない蛇の目の傘ひとつ恨みの道を行く女心は後に捨てましたI'm not afraid to die.